9 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show. We've been talking a lot today about this big game for the Cardinals coming up against the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I even made Burns a bet, lunch bet.
Gambo's going with a heart bet on this one. And look, this is going to sound like a total cop out. As these words come out of my mouth, I know they're going to sound like a total cop out. I wouldn't mind having to pay that bet. All right? I wouldn't mind having to come in here on Monday and say, I owe you lunch because the Cardinals beat the Chicago Bears. Fine. Let's go to lunch. Let's go to lunch Monday. Take you where you want to go. Pay that off. Because then...
It's like putting all the confidence points on them or against them the way you did last week.
I just don't believe that they're this bad. Now, first week, bad. Second week, really bad. Third week, man, if it happens again, okay. I'm on the Titanic with everybody going down. I mean, I get it. But right now, I'm on that little piece of platform. I'm on that piece of wood. I'm hanging on.
Has Rose made room for you?
I'm Rose. I'm Rose.
Okay.
I'm Rose.
Because Rose could have just slid over about 2 feet and Jack would have been just fine.
I agree.
But no, Rose, you had to hog the whole piece of wood.
Yep.
And poor Jack sank to the bottom of the ocean and froze to death.
Yep.
Way to go. Way to go, Rose.
Ruined the whole movie.
Thanks a lot. Look, I hope I owe you lunch on Friday or on Monday. I really do. I hope I owe you lunch. But if the Cardinals, they're 0-2, we know the numbers by now. We know that about 11 to 12% of teams that start 0-2 make the playoffs after starting that way. Bill Barnwell, some very harsh words about the organization today in a big, long piece, a big shock. It's Bill Barnwell on ESPN.com today. In which he looked at all the 0-2 teams and basically evaluated their chances of making the playoffs. Only the Bills had a worse chance in his mind of making the playoffs than the Arizona Cardinals. And his exact words were something along the lines of, 0-2, this season is over for the Cardinals. And one of the points he made in his write-up about the Cardinals is similar to something we've been saying about Josh Rosen. And I wonder why we haven't applied this to some of the defensive players. We've all talked about Rosen and how, man, when this season is done, when you know you're out of it, you got to turn it over to Rosen. You got to find out if he can be your franchise quarterback. You got to give him those reps. You got to find out everything you need to know about Josh Rosen. Couldn't you say the same thing about Dale Buchanan in this defense?
Hassan Reddick?
About Hassan Reddick in this defense?
Chad Williams on the offense?
Chad Williams on the offense?
Yeah, I buy that. I buy that. I mean, it's a fair point because everybody's going to say... Now, some of these other guys may be coming back. Bradford, we know. There's one player who we know is not coming back next year. Sam Bradford. We don't know about anybody else. Offensive linemen, defensive linemen, safeties, corners. I don't know if there's another player on the roster we could say he's definitely not coming back next year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. There might be. There might be, like, I'd have to think about it. And we could probably speculate that it's probably... But we just don't know for sure. We know Bradford's not coming back. But if you do get to the point where you're 0-3 and you're not playing, then absolutely. I mean, you have to see what you have in these young players. You got to go to the Suns' philosophy. We're just going to play all the young guys. Not because you're but they're not doing it to tank. They're doing it because they really got to find out.
Sure.
Can these guys play or not?
You invested the 13th pick overall in the draft on Hassan Reddick. You better find out if he can play in this defense, right?
But I did tell you yesterday, Pro Football Focus grades him as one of the highest rated defensive players in the few plays he's played for the Cardinals.
Hassan Reddick has had 17 snaps in two games. Dale Buchanan played in every snap in game one, but only 35% of the snaps in game two. Now, I understand what Wilkes has said repeatedly. Man, your draft status does not guarantee you anything on this team. And that's probably how it should be. But if we're going to apply the logic of, man, at some point you really got to start playing Josh Rosen. If this season is truly lost, you got to play Josh Rosen to figure out what you've got. I think the same thing does apply to two former first-round picks who right now don't look like they have much of a home in this defensive alignment that Steve Wilkes has brought with him here in the first year on the job. You kind of need to know if those guys do have a home in this defense because they're two former first-rounders. I mean, you would like that to work out.
What has Wilkes said? That, you know, there is no, like...
That nothing's promised, nothing's guaranteed. That you're
right.
you're not, just because you're a first-round pick doesn't mean anything to him. The best 11 guys are going to play.
Right.
That's also been the rub. I mean, Hassan Reddick, the best 11 guys have played, and they haven't played very well. So couldn't you argue that you should give Hassan Reddick a look because he might be better than the 11 guys that you think are better than him and who have been playing above him?
I mean, I would.
Right?
I mean, he's learning a new position, right? off the ball linebacker. I mean, he's trying to learn a new position. My understanding was, I've said this, you know, after the first week, that a lot of it was just mental, like just trying to get it all down. You know, Buchanan, have you going into this season, did we not think that Deion Buchanan was a really good football player?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Yes,
the
we
way
did.
He was used in the systems before. So, like, to me, there's also a part of it where Wilkes has to figure out how to best utilize the players he has. You can't be like, this is my system, this is how it works. He's got no, Deion Buchanan's a good football player. Like, he's a really good football player. We've seen it.
Find out a way to use him.
Find out a way to use him.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Find out a way to use him. That's your fault. That's on you if you can't figure out a way to get Buchanan to be a good football player. You know, neither Buchanan nor Reddick played linebacker in college. So neither one of those guys played linebacker in college. Buchanan was a safety. Reddick was a defensive end. Now they're asking these guys to play like linebackers. So I get that there's a learning curve, but Buchanan was a safety. He was able to come up in the box and really work under James Betcher and excel. But now the way they've got, and then Reddick was more of a defensive end. They're trying to move him to linebacker. So I do think there's a learning curve. I buy that. But I do think you get to a point where you're like, okay, let's just play him. Just play him. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Figure it out. Because after enough reps, you'll kind of figure it out.
And I would.
If you're a good player.
I'd be more inclined to not play them if the guys in front of them were playing so well that you said, well, you know, I mean, you can't play Hassan Reddick. Look at how this guy's playing. But they're not playing that well, right? They're the guys in front of them are not playing so well that they demand all this playing time. The defense has not been good either so far this year. So it's Al Holcomb's the defensive coordinator. He was asked today why Hodges is playing more at the linebacker spot.
Well, he's vocal. He's shown some leadership. He's a physical presence right now in the defense for us. You know, he's playing with some of the fundamentals with his hands, hand violence, tackling, those things, getting off of blocks. He understands offensive football a little bit, so that's helped him, you know, increase his snaps on the field.
So is he the reason that Deion Buchanan's not playing a whole lot right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a constant rotation. You know, coach talks about it all the time. There's no sense of entitlement, and right now, you know, we're just trying to continue to uncover guys who have that DNA that we're looking for, the physicality, the effort, the communication, all of those kind of things. And you know, as you go into it, you start to learn about different players and what different players' skill sets and what they bring to the table. And right now, Gerald's done a pretty good job of that in terms of stepping up and providing some of those things that we're looking for.
I just don't know that Gerald has a big role with this team going forward. And Buchanan, you got to make a decision. Because he's a free agent.
Sure.
Like, do you like him enough to keep him or do you not? Now, last year you had Carlos Dansby, and Carlos called the defense. And I was saying one thing about Deion is I don't think that he was ready to call the defense. So they had Bynes doing it a lot last week. So I think one of the things with Deion was too much on his plate having to call the defense. Because linebackers call the defense, not defensive linemen, not corners, not safety. It's linebackers that call the D. They gave Deion that responsibility with Dansby gone. Now that, you know, Dansby did it, but now with Dansby gone, Deion's got the responsibility. May have been too much for him. So they wanted to get other guys in it. And again, play in the system that they're playing. They've only been playing the two linebackers. So there's not a lot of linebackers on the field at one time.
Patrick Peterson today addressed what was made news yesterday. Yesterday they piped in crowd noise of people booing because the last time they were at home, that's what the Cardinals heard.
Yeah, I kind of honestly, I knew something was up because I was like, that noise sounds familiar. And that's when you hear crowd noise, it's always, you know, cheering and hooping and hollering. And but on this particular day, it was, you know, the last sounds that we heard when we left State Farm Stadium. So, you know, we definitely don't want to give our fans that type of outcome again because, you know, as a home team, especially playing in your first week one game at home and getting booed, I believe, like, in the second quarter, something like that. That's an embarrassment on our behalf. So we want to make sure that we don't give the fans that reaction again.
So Peterson says that the players got the message that Wilkes was sending when he played the sound of the booing at the end of practice yesterday?
The message definitely was received, but it was almost like a subliminal message. You know, guys got the message without coach really saying nothing. You know, and he relied on the leaders a lot to make sure that we relay the message through our players. And I hope that we all can get on one accord and just start making plays together as we start moving forward to build nothing but, you know, great chemistry. For these 14 weeks we have together as a team.
Subliminal messages. What did Herm Edwards do last week before the San Diego State game?
Showed him a slideshow of a balloon blowing up until it popped.
All right. And now Steve Wilks pipes in crowd noise of booing.
Yeah.
Whatever way you got to get through to the players, right? Whatever way you got to get through. You try. Now, it didn't work with San Diego State. They lost the game, but I don't think they lost it because of any reason other than that team was a good football team and outplayed them that day.
Join Kevin McCabe and AZ Preps Live this Saturday from 9 to 11 at the Chick-fil-A on Rittenhouse in Queen Creek. You'll have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year. D-backs and ASU tickets and more. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details on the Chick-fil-A High School Football Roadshow Series. Everybody's trying to figure out what happened to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and their own hitting coach has an idea. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. The elimination number is 4. Arizona Diamondbacks are 5 back with 9 to play, 6 back with 9 to play.
This pisses me off that the Rockies lost 3 in a row to the Dodgers. I mean, come on! Like, we can't
six
help you. Like Colorado, hey, we can't help you. We can't help you. Maybe unless, you know, you want to try to lose those games on purpose, which I would. Like, I would.
No, you wouldn't.
Oh, I swear I would.
No, you would. If you were the manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, that would be your pregame message to the guys. Hey, guys, go lose. No, you wouldn't.
I would do what the Suns have done over the last couple of years. I would figure out a way to lose on purpose.
So Patrick Kivlahan would start every... I shouldn't say that. Patrick Kivlahan had 2 triples last night.
What say, my pitcher's doing good, I take him out.
Patrick, from my family to yours, I apologize for throwing you as the butt of that joke. You don't deserve that. You helped the Diamondbacks win.
I find a way to make sure that Diekman and Andries and Boxberger and those guys all pitch.
Well,
I find a way to get him in there.
Well,
Diekman, get warm up.
I warm up. You're starting.
I'm using you in the fourth.
You're starting today's game, Jake.
Yeah,
it's all you. 6 back.
I'm not kidding. I would not. I would lose all the games to Colorado. I would. I just don't. I mean, don't we hate the Dodgers more than anything in the world?
Yes, we do. And I heard.
Wouldn't we like to help Colorado a little bit?
Derek Hall was on with Doug and Wolf this morning, and I heard Doug made a joking reference at the end of the interview about doing whatever it took to keep the Dodgers out of the pool to celebrate. If they clinch here. Now, if I remember right. The last time they had horses, but didn't Dave Roberts say, we're not going to do that? Last year when they won the series.
Okay, I'm not worried about the pool.
Okay, so you don't care about the pool?
I don't care about the pool.
Okay, because a lot of people care about the pool.
I don't want them celebrating here.
Because I remember a year
ago.
Because
they hate us and they'd love to stick it to us like that.
Do you think they really matter? Do you think it matters to the Dodgers if, like, do you think, oh, man, we want to clinch in Arizona?
I would say this. If they can't clinch in L.A., they'd rather clinch here.
I don't think matters to them that much. We're just the little pest. We're not anything to them.
But they hate us. They don't like us.
We hate them.
Are you saying if given the choice of clinching at home or clinching here, you think the Dodgers would rather clinch here?
No. They'd rather clinch at home.
Okay, I agree.
But anywhere else, they could clinch in San Diego, they could clinch in San Francisco, or they can clinch here. They'd be like, screw the Diamondbacks. We'll clinch here. The history we have with that team, we were in first place for 100 days. Like, they don't like us.
Andy just put up a picture of the horses. But if I remember right, from the playoff series a year ago, when the Dodgers eliminated the Diamondbacks here, and those horses were out there, Dave Roberts had said before the series started, no, man, we're not going in the pool. We're not going to do that.
But it's like, not the pool.
It's not the pool. It's just the indignity of watching them celebrate here.
It's like the adding insult to injury. Okay, the Dodgers are going to win it again. Oh, they get to celebrate here in Arizona. I warned you about this 3 weeks ago. I do not want this to happen. I don't.
When the story of the 2018 Diamondbacks is written, one of the big chapters will be devoted to offensively how much it's just been a struggle all year long. Outside of a pocket here, a week there, a couple weeks here, it's been a struggle all year long. Dave Magadan is the hitting coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and it was some very blunt talk, I thought, this morning on AZ Central and in the Arizona Republic, the quotes that he gave to Nick Pecoro about how the team has struggled offensively. He believes his hitters are capable of doing the things they did in the middle of the season when they were putting up the numbers, but Magadan believes ultimately the Arizona Diamondbacks were, for whatever reason, not able to adjust to the pitches that they were seeing. In particular, pitches on the outer half of the plate, quote, you've really got to use the field with your approach, and our hitters are just rolling over or swinging and missing, just not having the correct approach against some of these pitchers that we were facing. I think probably that's the one common factor throughout all of our periods of time when we would struggle to score runs is that. Just the fact that you can't just go up there and try to extract what you want out of the at-bat if he's not offering for you to do that, close
wow.
quote.
That is fascinating.
Now, I'm saying it probably with a little more edge in my voice than he did because I'm doing it for emphasis, but he's basically saying, look, man, if the pitch is on the outer half of the plate, go hit it the other way. Quit trying to pull it. Quit trying to roll over. Because all you're going to do is roll over on it or strike out on it. If that's what he's going to give you, take it. Go hit it that way. And our guys wouldn't change their approach at the plate in the middle of their struggles.
Whose fault is that?
There was a
time in the beginning of the season when they couldn't hit. We talked about should they replace Dave Magadan.
Okay, but then in the middle of
the year, they actually performed.
Right.
And things started to get going again.
Okay.
Peralta had a good year. Goldie was having a good year. Obviously, there's still a lot of guys that are challenged offensively.
Yeah.
Especially all the catchers.
I'm Dave Magadan. You're one of my hitters. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You and I sit down in a video session every single day, and I show you your four at-bats from the night before, and every single at-bat, you're not taking the pitch on the outer half of the plate the other way. You're not changing your approach at the plate. And I'm showing you the video, and I'm telling you every day, man, you have to change your approach. Why did you try to pull this pitch? Why are you rolling over on this pitch? You go up there that day, and in your four at-bats, you try to pull every single pitch you're getting on the outer half of the plate.
Whose
fault is it? Whose fault is it? I've told you.
Okay.
I've showed it to you. I've taught it to you.
There's two answers to this. It's the player's fault. That's what you want to hear. It's the player's fault for not doing it. But then if I'm Magadan, I go to Lavello. Listen, I've been working with this guy for 2 weeks to get him to go the other way. He won't listen to a damn thing I'm saying. Okay, then you don't play. Like, you're not going to play. If you're not going to listen to our hitting coach, you're not going to play. Now, you can't do that to Goldie. But you can do it to almost anybody else on the team.
Sure.
I mean, hey, Nick Ahmed won't go the other way. Okay, you're not playing. Nick, if you're not going to listen to the coaching, then you're not going to play.
Yeah.
So there's two answers. The answer is it's the player's fault. But if I'm Dave Magadan and I'm telling these players to do something and they're not listening, then when I'm having my meeting with Torrey Lovello, hey, why are these guys not taking the ball? I've told them to do that. Okay, well, then you're not going to play.
Here's another Magadan quote that you're going to like. Magadan said that with the amount of information the coaching staff provides the hitters about opposing pitchers on a daily basis, quote, there's no reason, close quote, they wouldn't be able to make the proper approach to the plate. Strong stuff, I thought, by Magadan.
So are they tuning him out?
I don't know. Maybe.
Does that seem like it suggests it?
Yes, it does suggest it.
He's giving you the information. He's telling you what to do. He's showing you film. You're not doing it.
Yep.
Are they just so stubborn? Hey, look at your batting average. Look at your batting average. Alex Avila. Well, I don't think Alex Avila could even put the ball in play, so that doesn't matter. But, like, look at the batting averages.
Hold on. Let's see. Anybody who had 325 in the office pool as to when Gambo would mention Alex Avila, you won. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Andy, did you have 325 in the office pool? Congrats, man. You won
a lollipop. Listen, you got it. This is a serious.
I know. I know it is.
No, like, I know we're joking, but, like, are they tuning Magadan out? If Magadan's going to them with all this information and telling them what to do and they're not listening, well, like, okay. I understand, like, Magadan saying, I told them what to do, they're not doing it. It's not my fault. I told them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, but it is your fault. They're tuning you out. You're not getting through to them. You could say all day long that you told them to do it. You showed them how to do it, and they're not doing it. You're not getting through. Or Tori's just so loyal and there's no consequences. There are no consequences?
Unless it's last night and you start Christian Walker, Patrick Kivlahan, and
okay,
Ildemar
so I waited
Vargas.
Until I waited until the season was over before there were consequences?
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. And I wouldn't be surprised at all when the Diamondbacks this year start to look at things this offseason they're going to do
okay
to fix what happened. Oh, I'm sure they're going to look right at their hitting coach and wonder if they need to make a change there.
You told them what to do. They didn't do it.
That's going to be one of the first items on the docket when they start talking about this offseason.
I want to ask Lavello about this next week. My memory's not good. I'll forget. Remind me.
I'll remind you.
I want to ask him, did Magadan ever come to you and say these guys aren't listening?
You won't call me or text me when Goodfellas is on.
Karen!
On a Wednesday night, but I'll remind you to ask Lavello that, because that's the sort of one-sided...
I watched Goodfellas last night.
One-way street type relationship we have here.
I did. I watched Goodfellas.
And he didn't text me to tell me a channel.
God, it was so good.
Very disappointing.
Such a great movie.
The Arizona Cardinals will be facing one of the best defenses the NFL has to offer this Sunday, and they haven't even reached their potential yet. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Their 10 sacks so far are the best in the NFL over the first 2 weeks. I believe their 5 forced fumbles so far are the best in the NFL through the first 2 weeks of the season. They've allowed 3. These next two numbers will really concern you if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan. This matchup this weekend.
I've already made the bet with you.
Yeah, I know. It's too late.
I can't take it back.
You're locked in. You cannot. No take backs on this one, my friend. The Bears so far this year have allowed 3 first half points all season. The Cardinals have been outscored in the first half 40-0 so far this season. The Bears have allowed 33 first downs so far this year.
Okay.
Third best in the NFL. Cardinals have struggled in that department as well.
Getting first downs.
Of just getting first downs.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm shocked by the yards after the catch with the Cardinals. They're getting none. Like, literally no yards after the catch. Like, yeah, guys are just getting tackled immediately if they do catch the ball. But listen, this Bears team is not ready yet. Okay? They're not as good as Green Bay. They're not as good as Minnesota. But they're a little bit like San Francisco. They're a little bit like San Francisco. Like, they got the young quarterback. They've got some talent. Like, they're on the rise. Like, you could see that within a couple of years, they could be a pretty good football team. Now, a lot depends on Trubisky working out.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot depends on Mitchell Trubisky working out. But, yeah, I mean, their defense is pretty good. And this will be a tough chore for the Cardinals. Now you got a new coach. They had a lot of failures under Fox. Lot of failures. They weren't very good. And they haven't been to the playoffs in a while, and they've had years where they've won 3 games, you know? But now they feel like they're able to turn it around. I mean, getting Khalil Mack was such a big deal for them. That was such a big deal, because not only does it give you a great player, but it also lets everybody in that organization, all those players, know, man, we're trying to win now.
Yeah.
Like, we're trying to win right now. We just traded for Khalil Mack. This guy's one of the best at what he does. We just traded for him. He's on our team now. So there is this feeling in Chicago, like, okay, they can compete with a lot of teams in the NFL.
Yeah, Khalil Mack is obviously out. The Bears are, you think about the ineptitude, and I know Bickley's been talking about this the last couple of days or so. The Bears are 500 for the first time since week 6 of the 2014 season. All right? So that was a while ago. The Bears are trying to be above 500 for the first time since week 4. Of 2014. So you have to literally go back 4 years before the Bears were in this kind of position that they're in now. In back-to-back games under John Fox, and back-to-back wins under John Fox, they win one week,
and
the next week they were 1-7. So they would win, and the next week they were 1-7.
Only once
the John Fox years did they win back-to-back games. That's how bad they were.
Listen, they have the league-high 10 sacks. They've got touchdowns in back-to-back games. They got the NFC Defensive Player of the Week right now. I mean, they're starting to put this together. Now you're facing an Arizona team who offensively is very, very challenged. So, like, there is this belief that in Chicago that this defense can carry them, that this defense can... keep them in all game, keep them in games into the fourth quarter, just about every game. That's the feeling there, is that they have a chance to be in all of these football games because they've got the ability to go pressure the quarterback, and go force turnovers.
Yeah, Pete Prisco, NFL writer, was on Bickley and Murata today. He was asked if the Bears' defense is for real.
Yes and no. I mean, because you still haven't seen the best of Khalil Mack. I mean, in both the second halves, he's kind of, you know, wilted a little bit, and a lot of that has to do with the fact he wasn't around for training camp. So you haven't seen the best of him. They got good players. I mean, Keem Hicks is a good player. I think Roquan Smith will get better. You know, Fuller's pretty good in the secondary. The two safeties, Jackson and Amos, are both pretty good players.
So there's Pete Prisco telling us the defense could actually get better once Khalil Mack gets in better shape.
Right.
Because he didn't really have a training camp. I mean, if this is...
Danny Trevathan, Roquan Smith, Eddie Jackson. I mean, they just got a lot of good players there. I mean, you know, 10 sacks. Best in the NFL. And when you think about it, Khalil's only got two. Trevathan's got two, and then you've got a bunch of guys with, you've got, you know, Roquan Smith, Eddie Jackson, Eddie Goldman, Akeem Hicks, Roy Robertson Harris, Aaron Lynch, all have one. So it's like you're getting sacks from, it's not like one guy or two guys. You're getting sacks from a lot of different players. And when you watch the film of the Bears, you know, when you're watching that Bears defense, you're like, okay, they're coming at you from a lot of different angles.
The much talked about Mike McCoy met the media today. Thursday is the day the two coordinators speak for the Arizona Cardinals, and McCoy met the media today and said, when it comes to Khalil Mack, you have to account for him on every single play.
Well, anytime you see a player like that or you play against a player like that, you got to account for him every play, because he can change the game in a hurry, as you've seen. In the games that he's played this year and his, you know, his entire career, it's that, you know, he's got that one play you always look at and say, wow. You know, he has that wow factor every single play, the way he plays the game.
It's crazy, because for years around here, we got so used to thanking the Raiders for being such an inept organization. You know, Carson Palmer, Jared Veldheer.
Right.
It's weird to...
And then
to
give away Khalil Mack.
To give away Khalil Mack. I mean, it's like, hey, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
You know how many guys say that they don't want to be there and they want to... That doesn't mean you automatically trade them right away.
Right.
Happens all the time.
Yeah, it means they want to get paid.
I think Aaron Donald said he didn't want to play for the Rams.
Sure. It just means they want to get paid. It doesn't mean you have to get rid of them. But Gruden came in, new coach, big money, probably big ego, thinking,
big ego,
you know, I don't need Khalil Mack. I'm John Gruden. I can figure this out without Khalil Mack. And now, after 2 weeks, the Raiders are like, we don't have a pass rush. Well, duh. Yeah, you don't have a pass rush.
Right.
Trade Khalil Mack. Of course you don't have a pass rush.
Yeah, I could have said, yeah, Aaron Donald, when he wasn't reporting, that was the whole deal. I mean, that whole thing was just, if they want to be paid.
Yep.
They want to be paid. It wasn't that he didn't want to play for, but you know, but you say that. I'm not going to play for you. I don't want to play for you guys. Trade me. You know, you hear it all the time. We just had the Steelers player, Antonio Brown. Oh, yeah, trade me. You'll see. You'll prove it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it doesn't mean every time somebody says, oh, yeah, trade me, it doesn't mean you have to trade the guy. It doesn't mean that you have to trade him.
No, it doesn't. More McCoy. A lot this week about the offense getting scaled back. Just how much has the Cardinals' offense been scaled back?
Every week is different. You go back, you do certain things, and you look at the plan and say what is best for this week and the opponent you're playing. So you put the best plan together and got to go execute.
Now, that being said, he says we're not cutting that much.
We're not just running five plays. I mean, we have, you know, there's certain things you cut back, and there's certain situations and certain categories you might have one or two less plays in that category. You know, you've got to go out there and make sure you got enough too.
Interesting. That's kind of a far cry from
I know
it's semantics, but it seems, well, we've been told all week long, scale the offense back, scale the offense back.
I told you what I think of this. I mean, for what? Nothing they ran was complicated. They've only run 80 plays in two games. That's it. Like, what are you scaling back? Like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, what do you skip? Nothing you ran was a complicated play. Nothing was complicated. There was nothing where you had a double reverse or it's not throwing the ball to Nick Foles here. Okay, we're going to have an option and you're going to run it and you're going to pit. There was nothing complicated.
Yeah.
Did you see one complicated play in two? There was nothing that, like, let's take this out of the book because this is a double reverse and we're throwing it to the quarterback like what the Eagles did with Nick Foles. There is nothing complicated there. It was straightforward stuff.
Plus, I know you read the Barnwell story on ESPN just like I did, right? The Barnwell story in which he ranked all the teams that started 0-2 and who's got the best chance of making the playoffs. In that article, in his write-up about the Cardinals and why he doesn't think they have a shot of making the playoffs, he brought up something you and I both brought up a couple of days ago. Okay, Sam Bradford, once upon a time, famously getting traded to the Minnesota Vikings days before the season opened, picked up that offense and learned it in a matter of days, right?
Yes.
Sam Bradford's a very intelligent quarterback. You need to scale back the offense for who? Sam Bradford? The guy who picked up the Minnesota Vikings offense in a couple of weeks when he got traded there about 10 days before the season started? Sam Bradford's a veteran quarterback who probably processes offenses like Mike McCoy's fairly easily. I mean, I know it's harder than I'm making it sound, But once upon a time, he got traded from the Eagles to the Vikings about 10 days before the season started, and he did just fine.
I told you.
And now you got to simplify this offense for him? It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. For whom? Who are you scaling it back? Are you really scaling it back for Bradford, or
is it the
wide receivers?
The wide receivers who don't understand where they're supposed to go? Who are making the wrong reads, who are running the wrong routes. Maybe it's not Bradford at all. Maybe it's the wide receivers who just are running to the wrong spots.
I don't know. I got plenty of video of wide receivers that are wide open, and then he's throwing it to the guys that are covered, not the guys that are open. Okay?
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't know who you're scaling it back for.
You showed me that video.
Yeah, there are guys that are wide open, and he's throwing it to the guys that are covered. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Bickley and Murata tomorrow live, the grand opening of the new AT&T store on the corner of Gilbert and Ocotillo in Chandler. You'll have the chance to win D-backs tickets to the final weekend homestand of the season and more. Plus, you can check out the new iPhone 10. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for details. Over the last few weeks, Manny Wilkins has shown off his fiery personality, and the ASU quarterback will not apologize for it. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. ASU getting ready to head up to Seattle, Washington. Take on the Huskies Saturday night. Jordan, I have not seen if the spread on that game has moved at all. Has it moved at all from the 17.5 that it was a couple days ago? Yeah, he's going to look at that real quick. You looked at some numbers with the defense for ASU, and I know nobody's happy with the defensive effort that they put forward against San Diego State, all right? They got manhandled in the second half of that game. They were tired. The offense wasn't doing them any favors with those four straight three and outs, and I imagine over the course of that third quarter, fourth quarter, ASU's defense just got plain worn out by San Diego State, the physical approach they had offensively. But it's clear, it's still very clear to me that this defense is much, much improved from the defenses we saw under Todd Graham, especially the last few years.
Yeah, there's no question. And that's what, you know, like, you know, Washington, when they start to, you know, pick apart this game and look at ASU, it's the first thing that they are noticing, you know, in their film sessions. And when the media is talking to them about this game, that's one of the things that they are absolutely noticing is that this defense is good. You know, that this defense has a lot better, to the point where I was reading a story, and you'll get a kick out of this. I think you'll really like this. It says, while the Dogs won't be facing a blitz every freaking down like they have in the past against Arizona State, they will be facing a much better rounded defense, a more disciplined defense, and generally a much better defense than what the Devils had in the past. Here's where it gets interesting. All that, and it's only week four of the season, after the crap show that was Todd Graham's defenses, the Sun Devils have something actually dependable for the first time in a while, and it's already paid off for them. So they called Todd Graham's defense a crap show.
Well, all those big plays that they used to give up every single week?
Oh, my God. Just the yards. You'd look at the end of the game, you'd be like, oh, my God, how many yards did they give up?
You would have almost like a running ticker throughout the last three seasons of how many 30-plus yard plays they would give up, how many 40-plus yard plays they would give up, right? I mean, it seemed like they were good for one or two or three every single week. Now, I know they didn't.
I think more than that.
Well, I was the numbers in my head that I remember, like the last 3 years, it was something like 25, 30, and 33 for each season, right? So if you do the average, it's like one, two, or three per season, depending on what you do. But yeah, you would just have a little clicker, and you would keep track of it. Oh, there's another one. Yeah, there's another one. There's another big play.
Pac-12's worst defense a lot of times under Todd Graham.
Yeah, it's now, again, I was not happy with how they played against San Diego State, but I sort of understand some of the factors given how inept the Sun Devils were offensively. And that's why Rob Likens is probably the most important Sun Devil guy on the staff going into this game against Washington. He has got to figure out a way to run the ball and keep that offense on the field. He has got to. They've got to sustain drives. They've got to get first downs. They've got to keep the offense on the field. You have to figure out a way to reestablish the run game against Washington if you have any shot at winning this game.
In my handy-dandy notebook, I had this from ASU's 5-7 season 2 years ago. They gave up 217 plays of 10 or more yards. Third worst in college football. They gave up 76 plays of 20 or more yards, and they allowed the most 50-yard plays in the country, 28. Now, part of the reason, in all honesty, was the garbage gimmick offense that Todd Graham ran, that they ran. It was this this stupid offense where they tried to just they played so fast that their defense never got to rest.
Yeah.
Because if you play fast and you're three and out, you're by the time your defense sits down, they got to get back up and come on the field. And that's what I think in many ways. And you know how much I hated it. You know how much I hated that offense.
Mm-hmm.
That offense killed their defense.
Manny Wilkins yesterday met with the media, and he's a fiery guy. He's a fiery guy. He was fiery against San Diego State. There were some people who thought that he didn't like the play calls. There were some people who saw him yelling at Frank Darby against Michigan State. He addressed that yesterday.
When you're a leader of a football team, you're a leader of people that are 22 years old, 18 years old, certain people react differently to certain things. When I jump on Frank, it may look like a negative thing to the media. It may look negative on TV, but guess what? Frank Darby reacts differently than N'Keal Harry does. And when you jump on Frank, Frank's like, all right, it's time to go get this bag. I got to do what I got to do now. And he fixes his mistakes, you know what I'm saying? So guess what? If you guys didn't tell, Frank had a blow-up game this week, and he played his butt off, and he caught every single ball that came to him, and it's because I told him, you're right.
Look, yelling, he says, is in his nature.
I handle myself the correct way. I'm passionate about what I do. I hate losing again. I say it again. If I was on the sideline and I wasn't talking to anybody, guess what? You guys would be, why are you so quiet on the sideline? Why are you doing this? Why is that? So there's always going to be, you know, a pro and a con to every situation, and I understand that. So I understood after the game that some people would probably be offended by what I said, and my Twitter is going to blow up and all this stuff, but it is what it is. It comes with playing this position. It comes with playing this sport.
Not offended at all by what you said. I mean, listen, different people are motivated different ways. Some people, you got to yell and get under their skin. You got to challenge them, right? I love that. Tell me I can't do something, right? What were we looking at? There's two rocks and wherever those rocks were. Can we remember we were debating that a couple of weeks ago? There was like
Some woman in Scotland who lifted rocks that totaled like
right 1,000 pounds
or something, right?
And I'm like, damn, I want to try that. I really want to try that. Like, I want to try to. I'd like to go try that. You know, and like some people, like they want to be like he was talking about Darby. Some people want to be challenged. They want to be told they can't do something. And other people, you got to coddle a little bit more, and you got to pump them up. And so everybody's different. I think that's what Manny Wilkins' point was. Is not everybody's the same, man. Yeah, I could get on Darby's ass, no problem. That's between me and him. Like yeah. It's not a big deal.
After the game, he called San Diego State University's secondary garbage. Man, that was a garbage secondary. He was asked about that yesterday. Here's what he said.
Professionally, that wasn't the correct thing to do. But I mean, just going to be honest with you guys. I'm not here to be like another quarterback. I'm not here to be Peyton Manning. I'm not here to be Taylor Kelly or all these. You know, that's not who I am. You know, I think professionally it would have been the right thing for me to just obviously give the other team credit. They deserved the win. They played harder. But I'm passionate about what I do. I believe what I say. It is what it is.
He's a fascinating guy, that Manny Wilkins.
Said that right after the game, right?
Yeah, right after the game.
Motions are high.
Sure, sure.
Right.
He said that secondary's garbage, man. That secondary's garbage. That's BS or that's horse bleep or what. I can't remember exactly what he said, but I distinctly remember him calling the SDSU secondary.
Yeah, if I'm San Diego State, I'm saying, you want to look at the scoreboard, Manny? Because we beat you.
Yeah.
You want to go look at that scoreboard again? Because we own you. Like, so I'm not really, if I'm San Diego State, I'm like, I don't care what Manny Wilkins just had to say. We just beat their asses.
It worked last night. Is Troy Lovello going to do it again on Friday? He says no.
Oops.
We wonder why. Next on the Burns and Gambo Show.